Good afternoon, everybody. All you individuals out there, this is the Weekend Interview Show, and I'm your host, Scott Horton. And we've got a pretty good show lined up for you today. Before we get started with the interviews, I have to admit to you that I'm in a roundabout way about to give my endorsement to John Kerry. But wait, before you start tying up your nooses, please let me explain. First of all, probably many in this audience are familiar with a professor named Carol Quigley, wrote a great book back in the day called Tragedy and Hope, published in 1966. And somewhere in that book, page 1200 and something or other, he says, look, the only reason we let there be two parties in the United States is so that the American people can, his ironic quotes, throw those rascals out every eight or even four years if necessary, without ever leading to a substantial shift in policy. And obviously that's the case, as here we are in 2004, the election between George Kerry and John Bush. It's really hard to pick between the two, and they both seem like the lesser of two emperors is basically our choice here, and it's kind of a pain. But I have to tell you why it is that I would prefer John Kerry win the election in November over George Bush. Point number one, no president should ever be reelected, ever, no matter what. And that is simply, and it doesn't even matter if the candidate running against him is clearly a lesser man. Every president should be thrown out of office after 4 years. That way we're never approving, giving them a mandate to continue doing what they're doing. I don't care whether it's Bill Clinton or George Bush or anybody else. No president should ever be reelected, particularly this time when George Bush and his ex-Trotskyite and Straussian neoconservative buddies and their policy of remaking the whole Middle East at gunpoint, really the whole world beginning in the Middle East at gunpoint, if that policy is basically affirmed in this referendum in November, if Bush is reelected, then that means we love everything that he's been doing for the past 4 years. As empire weakens our position by alienating all of our former friends around the world, I don't think there's really anything that could put more nails in the coffin of America's friendship with the rest of the world than to reelect George Bush. And that is a big problem. Now, don't anybody misunderstand me. I don't have a problem with unilateral wars, except that I have a problem with wars. But as far as unilateral, I don't care whether France and Russia say if our war is a good idea or not. I just think that if we're doing the right thing, they'd be on our side anyway, and probably. And, you know, if they don't agree, that's fine. I'm not really worried about that. However, everything that we have been doing, our government has been doing in our name in the last 4 years, has been a real disaster, and I would hate to reapprove that. Then you have the Hillary Clinton factor, another reason to vote for John Kerry. The Hillary Clinton factor, if John Kerry is elected and does 4 years and then is fired or even does 8 years, it's going to be really hard for Hillary Clinton to come in and run for office. If George Bush, on the other hand, is reelected and serves out eight, at the end of that 8 years, a Democrat's definitely going to win that election after 8 years of Bush, 90% chance. And so if you're really worried about Hillary Clinton and the kind of backlash against Bush's policy that she would supposedly take on them, that's something really to worry about. I mean, John Kerry is no hero, but he's probably a lot better than Hillary Clinton. Also, left-wingers only hate the government for not doing enough, whereas right-wingers usually hate the government for existing at all unless right-wingers are in power. So I want to welcome the right-wing back to hating the government. And also, as Doug Casey pointed out on WorldNet Daily the other day, it would take probably almost a year for Kerry to really get started killing people, whereas George Bush could hit the ground running. And I got to say, I'm voting for Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian. There's no doubt about that. But if I have to choose one or the other, it's got to be the Democrat this time. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest today is Mike Dixon. He's the chairman of the National Libertarian Party of the United States. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Appreciate it, Scott. Thanks a lot.
It's great to have you on. I got to first say before I start interviewing you that I have a little bit of a conflict of interest here. I am a paid consultant to the Badnarik campaign, and so it would not be likely for anyone to hear me say anything really bad about the Libertarian Party or Michael Badnarik between now and November. So just so I get that out of the way.
I should probably say the same thing as my as my son, who starts kindergarten next week, always says, you know, everybody in his family is voting for Michael Bednarik because he's the only person running for president who's come to our house for dinner.
Now, there's a very good reason to vote for the guy. He's also the only guy who could look you right in the eye and tell you the truth.
He's a great guy, I got to say that.
Okay, well, and speaking of Michael Bednarik, you're the chairman of the National Libertarian Party. What do you know about his campaign, and how successful is it compared to past libertarian campaigns for president?
I think the Bednarik campaign is doing a couple of things that are really important to point out. One is that they've gone long on the office and the background and the infrastructure, which is something that we haven't always had in the past. Additionally to that, they're breaking all the rules on the way they're running this campaign.
How do you mean?
They went to New Mexico a couple of weeks ago and sunk some money into some heavyweight TV advertising out there. And more importantly than that, they did polling to show where they stood and how many people identified them before and after. I think that's very, very important. I don't think we've ever had a candidate who's gone out this early and tried to make a mark like that. And I think that no matter how the thing all plays out at the end, we're going to know that we've tried some new and different things, and that's a big step forward for the LP.
Right on. And also, you know, he was polling at, what, like 5% at the start before he even got to New Mexico, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's absolutely critical. It was also telling that during that time when they ran all those ads in New Mexico, they got very, very high negative responses from both Republicans and Democrats. And I would figure that means you're doing something right when everybody's mad at you, right?
Yeah, I read one article where the Republican was trying to pretend that he'd never heard of him. You know, Michael Bednarik, who? No, we're not worried about that. We've never heard of that. And then the other political operatives were going, scrambling all over the place, trying to figure out how to try to co-opt Michael's positions.
Right, and I think that's something we're going to have to keep our eyes out for and see what becomes of this whole thing.
I truly believe that it is the pressure from the Libertarian Party that had Dennis Hastert coming out talking about abolishing the IRS and got Bush mentioning the national sales tax. Not that I think that that's particularly a great idea, but they do seem to be worried about the Libertarian Party this year.
I think that you got to hurt them before they bother to care about you. And I think right now the Bednarik campaign is doing things that are new and different, and that's hurting them, and that's great.
Why should anybody listen and vote for the Libertarians? What is it that the Libertarians stand for that are different enough from the mainstream parties that they would want to vote for you?
I think the LP is a party, as you pointed out in the beginning, that, you know, Michael Bednarik will look you straight in the eye and tell you the answer. You might not always agree with it, but at least you know the guy's telling you the truth from where he's standing and telling you what he thinks is going to work. And he'll spend the time to explain it to you if you want to listen, but you got to respect the fact that they put their answers right up front and tell you what they're going to do. I think that's a big part of it. I think that the people of this country are coming more and more to realize that there's not appreciable difference between the two major parties in what they're going to do. A lot of difference in what they say, but once they're in office, it's pretty much the same deal no matter which one's in power. And that's why I think the public ought to be looking at alternatives wherever they might find them.
Well, it used to be sort of a fringe position that the two parties are the same. You think that's becoming more and more a mainstream position among regular Americans?
Yeah, I think that more and more people are actually starting to realize that. I consume a wide range of media, libertarian as well as mainstream as well as other alternative medias. And there was one particular rather high-profile individual who would not be considered in any way libertarian who urged a national radio audience last week just to not vote. His point was, it won't matter anyway. Now, I certainly don't agree with him, but I thought it was stunning that somebody that's got a nationally syndicated radio show and is a guest on another nationally syndicated radio show was telling a large group of the public that it's all the same. It won't affect your daily life one way or the other, whichever one of these guys wins.
Well, and they kind of make, I won't say that guy made that point, but I hear people make the point against voting all the time, which really seems like a pretty credible position to me, and that is, you know, look, your guy Bednarik at most is going to get, you know, something less than 10% of the vote, maybe quite a bit less, and yet at the same time, the more of us that actually show up at the polls, the more we do to legitimize the Republicans and Democrats who have it all set for them anyway.
That argument I have heard, and I'll tell you that is something that it bothers me a little bit because I don't really think that anybody in the media or in the government looks at the total vote totals. I think the people in the media and the people in the government are completely sappy, and they've bought bought into this whole, well, we got this percentage or that percentage of the people who voted. I will tell you, though, this individual that I'm talking about made a very clear statement that if all of us just stayed home, they, the Republicans and the Democrats, would have to start paying attention to us as a voting bloc. I don't think libertarians or people who are in favor of a pure freedom philosophy are a big enough bloc that we're going to have that effect. I think we got to go out into the marketplace and we got to pull the lever for the libertarians and send the message that we want a radically smaller and less intrusive government.
After September 11th, the Libertarian Party apparently was in pretty serious financial difficulty. I guess some of the bigger donors dropped off, decided they were statists after all.
I don't think it was necessarily large donors who dropped off. I think that across the board, charities had a problem in the wake of 9/11. I think probably the LP was hurt actually initially and may not have acknowledged it due to their own lack of knowledge or observation of what was going on in their own house. I think the libertarians were hurt dramatically by the recession that started in the spring of 2000. And as the marketplace started to tail off, libertarians tend to be more self-employed. They tend to be more, you know, contractor, freelancer types, and they tend to work disproportionately in the high-tech industries. And in that early recession in 2000 into middle 2001, those industries got hurt really bad, and that hurt the LP dramatically.
And you guys have gotten that all straightened out by now, I suppose.
We dug ourselves out of that hole over the year of 2003. We've been back on our feet for quite a while. In fact, we've had 5 or 6 months of positive membership growth now, and we're looking at how that gets sustained by utilizing the presidential campaign and the new people that the Badnarik campaign is introducing our ideas to as a way to keep our momentum and our growth going.
You know, that reminds me, there was a great article that Harry Brown wrote called In Praise of the Libertarian Party, where he was saying, really, you know, regardless of whether they get anybody elected to national office at this point, that really the Libertarian Party, only by being a political party, can you really get the word out to people who don't know about it. That really, you know, flipping through C-SPAN or something is pretty much the only chance people are going to have to hear, you know, real individualism explained.
Yeah, I always describe it this way when I'm speaking to groups, which is that there is a global movement in favor of freedom. And that movement contains in it philosophers, economists, and political types. In the U.S., the political types are the LP. You know, there are plenty of economists who are for freedom, and there are plenty of philosophers who are for freedom. But the party is separate than that, and our role is to put people on the ballot as a means of communicating to the public. And you're absolutely right. The C-SPAN stuff, you know, Cato can do that, and other organizations can do that, and they can get their C-SPAN time. But realistically, for the average, you know, guy on the street, Joe Sixpack type, he's not going to encounter that stuff. What he's going to notice is when there's a person running for office in his community that has got that libertarian name next to it, and it gets covered in his local paper or on his local TV or radio.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I had heard of libertarians before, but I never really got a good understanding of what exactly they were about until I saw Harry Brown during the campaign in 1996.
That's great. I mean, that's exactly what so many of our members say, is that it was some sort of a campaign experience that caused them to first encounter it. Then you went out and you studied more, you learned more, and eventually you became, you know, energized by the whole deal. But it all starts with somebody running for office.
Now, the Libertarian Party is the third biggest party in the United States. It puts the Green and the Reform parties to shame, am I right?
Yes, in almost every measure. In fact, I should say in every measure. You can measure us on donors, on contributors, on members. You can measure us on how many ballots we're on. We're on the ballot in far more states consistently than any of those other parties have been.
Is Michael Badnarik going to be on the ballot in all 50 states this year?
We're not sure of that right now. I would put very good money that he'll be on the ballot in 48 or 49. I'd say 50 is a long shot. We're in court in a couple of states attempting to get access to the ballot, and we're not sure how the judges are going to rule.
Now, why would you have to go to court to get on a ballot?
Each state assigns its own rules for access to the ballot. And over the last generation, those rules have been getting progressively less difficult to meet. We got a couple of states where the threshold, the hurdle point, is just outrageous. One of those is the state of Oklahoma. By far, one of the hardest ballots to get on, and it's not all that big a state. mean, telling somebody from Texas that isn't actually, you know, like earth-shattering news to you guys. You're familiar with Oklahoma out there. But it's not a real big state. There's not a lot of people that live there. And yet the petition requirement to put a presidential candidate of a party on the ballot is almost 100,000 signatures. It's a huge, huge barrier. We've been in court in Oklahoma now for a number of months trying to win that one. And if there was one I said it would say is a long shot, it would be Oklahoma right now.
Well, that brings up the point, too, that even in the states where the Libertarian Party is on the ballot, there's the problem of all the resources wasted just trying to get on the ballot before you can even really start campaigning. And that, I guess that setup's kind of worked against you, too, huh?
It's a resource allocation problem, and it costs money, and it costs volunteer time on the streets gathering those petitions. It also costs tons of organizer time coordinating and managing those drives. And you guys had a heck of a big drive in Texas this year.
Yeah, we did. Here, we'll talk about that right when we get back from the break. It's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The guest is Mike Dixon, the chairman of the National Libertarian Party. Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, your host, and our guest today is Mike Dixon. He's the chairman of the National Libertarian Party. The phone number here, if anybody wants to get involved on the air, is 1-800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. And I want to say this about Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian candidate. Yes, I do work for him. I am a consultant to the campaign at one level or another, a pretty low one. But also, I know Mike personally, and I consider him a friend. And I have to say to the people out there who maybe are not too familiar with the libertarians and consider yourselves, you know, pretty much culturally conservative kind of people, I know Michael, and I know for a fact he drinks non-alcoholic beer when he drinks beer at all. He's never smoked a cigarette or a joint in his life. He's an Eagle Scout and a skydiving instructor and is... you know, scouts honor all the way from here to there. And I know him personally, and I know that he legitimately, and I know this is crazy to say about anybody running for anything in government, but the man actually, literally, has honesty and integrity. And I believe he is worth your vote. At least he's worth a look. Now, Michael Dixon, chairman of the National Libertarian Party. What do you see as the next step for the Libertarian Party after this election?
I think the next step is one of self-definition or maybe properly of public announcement. We always think about this in terms of saying that the public has to know what the word libertarian means. Then they have to understand what our policy prescriptions are, and they have to be willing to accept the fact that we're not off the acceptable map. Only at that point can they start to really encounter us and vote for us. And campaigns are a great way of reaching out. But in the off years, we have to be prepared to, if you will, market ourselves, what our name means and what our policy prescriptions would add up to the average guy on the street. And that's something we're working real hard on being ready for, kicking off in January.
Okay, well, in a phrase, what does libertarian mean to somebody who doesn't know?
You ask different people, you get different answers. I tend to personally be part of the leave me alone caucus, you know? Part of being a libertarian, in my definition, is that I want to run my life and my family my way. And I don't want anybody telling me how that would be done. I don't want the government doing that. I don't want my neighbor doing that. I don't want any, you know, busybody looking in on my family telling me how we ought to be living. It really gets all the way down to the basics of self-ownership and responsibility for your own actions and your own outcomes, whatever those might be. You know, if I go to school and I don't study, and I come out of school and I can't get a job, I got to bear the brunt of that, not looking for a handout from the government or from my neighbor or from my city. I've got to be responsible for myself.
Okay, well, and we can get back into policy prescriptions more in a minute, particularly War and Peace is what I want to talk about. But right now, let's go to James in Austin on the telephone. Hi, James.
Hi, how you doing, Scott? I'm enjoying it, listening to your show. Got a couple of things I wanted to say. One of them is actually a question. This is kind of a silly idea about bumper stickers. If there isn't, could there maybe be a bumper sticker that has, you know, a W with a circle line through it, you know, kind of like don't, you know, do not, and then a K with a circle line through it, and then have Michael Badnarik, you know, for president. I'd like to have that kind of sticker that was out there, if they're thinking about doing that, because I think that'd make a powerful statement about, you know, what the libertarian, how it's not of either one, you know, it's...
Right. Well, that's a really good point. I can suggest to you, out of total self-interest of my own, that you could go to thebumpersticker.com, and if you click on Michael Badnarik for president, we have 16 different Michael Badnarik bumper stickers up there for you to choose from, and there's also a suggest a sticker button. Oh, and we custom make them or anything else. So that's my plug for my little company in there. It's thebumpersticker.com.
So I could put in a suggestion for that, and maybe it might be used, or maybe I can create my own.
Sure.
Okay, well, thanks for that idea. And I just wanted to throw that idea out there because I think that'd be a pretty cool message. The other thing I wanted to say was I agree with you 100%. I'm not a member of the Libertarian Party, but I vote Libertarian. But... one of the points you made about the benefit, pseudo-benefit of Terry getting in was the idea of neoconservatives waking up.
Well, no, the neocons aren't going to wake up. I mean, your plain old rank-and-file Bush supporters will all
that's
be
what I mean.
Suspect
that's
government
what I mean.
Again, I hope.
Okay, what I meant was the neocon supporters.
Oh, the neocon, yes, I understand.
Yeah, like my mother, and there's some friends out there that... And what I've discussed with them, the reality of how Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma bombing, was a staged event by the government, and that's in the Clinton administration, and even that didn't sway them. They didn't see that as anything that they saw the government as being infallible.
Well, that's a good question for our guest, Mike. What do you think about the conservatives who couldn't stand the government during the Clinton years and the liberals who can't stand the government during the Bush years, and they all just seem to switch off back and forth? How is the Libertarian Party supposed to be able to get around that fact?
I thought it was really interesting, your comments in the opening segment where you talked about, you know, Republicans never met a government that they thought was worth anything until they were in power, and then they couldn't think of anything the government shouldn't be involved in.
You're right. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Just hang tight.
No
real
problem.
Quick. We'll get back to that when we get back. Thanks for the call, James. And we're going a short break. It's the Weekend Interview Show on Republic Broadcasting.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and the guest is Mike Dixon. He's the chairman of the Libertarian Party of the United States. Now, when we went out to the break, Mike, we were talking about the relationship between the right and the state.
I've got a real problem with the right, because they're always looking over my shoulder telling me what I ought to do. And I have a real problem with the right when they're in power and they can use the long arm of the law to do that kind of stuff. It's really a shame to me that they have managed to capture so much of the media and then have been able to convince themselves and their followers that, you know, the government's bad until it's their government, and then it's okay to do whatever the heck, you know, they might have dreamed up this way. I don't know how we combat that except to keep pointing out to people that this was a country founded on freedom and founded on individuals' rights to make their own choices, and that's something I think we need to get our arms around.
So the right and the left, they all agree about controlling your life. They just kind of disagree about what exactly about your life they need to control.
Well, or maybe which things they ought to do first.
Yeah.
I see a lot of dispute between them about the need to control all of it It's just the priority order that they seem to not exactly have in sync with each other.
Oh, man, I'm afraid that's true. All right, well, so I'm watching Wolf Blitzer, some idiot on CNN, and they say, well, when it comes to the war on terrorism, the American people support George Bush because he's, I don't know, proven he's a ruthless killer. I don't know what exactly why. But anyway, so but when it comes to the rest of the issues, John Kerry pulls way ahead of George Bush, and on those issues is particularly health, education, and the environment. And when it comes to those issues, the Democrats have the Republicans beat hands down in the polls. So Michael Dixon, chairman of the Libertarian Party of the United States, where do you guys stand on health, education, and the environment?
Oh, boy, health, education, and the environment. I'm for health, I'm for education, I'm for the environment. I just don't want the government telling me how I got to do it all. You know, let's be honest, we all want to be healthy, we all want to make our own choices about what medicines we ought to be able to take, and I personally trust the free market to give me products that I'm going to be able to use with amount of certainty about their purity and their dosage. The only things on the market that are going to affect my health that could possibly be dangerous to me are things the government has made illegal in one form or another, and therefore I don't have certainty about purity or about dosage. And to me, that's what the whole war on drugs is about. I don't care what drugs people take. I want them to be able to rely on purity and dosage. Now, you mentioned the environment. I'm a big fan of the environment. I happen to like to look at it. I'm inside right now because I'm in the southeast, and it's really hot and humid. I don't really go outside and encounter the environment a lot, but I enjoy having it there. I don't like the fact that the government owns so darn much of our environment, that they control so much of the land of this country and are keeping people from using it the way they might choose to use it. You know, the last one, I got to tell you, Scott, I think we've won that one. I think the whole education battle is just waiting for the giant to fall there. I think the people of this country have stood up and spoken too many times and said they want to control the education of their own children in their own way, in their own communities, and that the federal government, the state government, the city government has nothing to say about it.
Hey, you know,
I think that one's done.
Mike, I got a funny little anecdote about that, actually. This is to partially illustrate how good homeschooling can be, but also at the same time to illustrate just how powerful the American people are and how much control we can have over the government, whether we choose right or wrong. But there was a bill, I think this is 2 or 3 years ago, there was a bill filed by a representative from California in the National House of Representatives that was supposed to require a state teacher certificate for anyone who wanted to homeschool their kids. And it had 60 co-sponsors, and it had sailed through committee and was already on its way to the House floor when the homeschoolers found out about it. And they all emailed each other, and they said, don't call in on the phone and don't send emails. Send faxes, letters, and telegrams so that pieces of paper pile up. Now everybody get to work. And all the homeschool families across America called their congressmen or sent letters to their congressmen saying, hey, if you make it illegal for me to homeschool my kid, I'm going to have nothing to do all day but sit home plotting the destruction of your career. So go ahead and vote for it. And what happened in the end was the guy who sponsored the bill, the one guy who sponsored the bill in the first place, voted for it, and nobody else voted for it at all.
Unbelievable. That is great. I'm a big, big fan of people who can homeschool. I personally don't have it in my temperament to do that for my child, but I happen to live in a community with a really diverse group of private schools. And I'll tell you, once you've lived somewhere with lots and lots of private schools and you see how the market can work, you become even more sold on it than you were in the theory books, you know what I mean?
Sure. And, you know, privatizing this kind of thing, I think, is a real sure way to help call a truce in the culture war, too, because you have, you know, conservatives and liberals fighting about which kind of propaganda kids should be taught in their government schools that they're forced to go to, and whether they should be forced to learn about Jesus or whether they should be forced to learn about being a lesbian or whatever. Whereas if you just privatize it, then you can send your kid to the lesbian school and I can send my kid to the Jesus school, and it's nobody else's business because there's no force being applied.
That's right. We only fight about this stuff after it's been politicized. Curriculum is a non-issue until somebody wants to inject morals or ethics or values or any of that kind of stuff into it. Then it becomes a hot potato that everybody wants to argue about.
It's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The guest is Mike Dixon. He's the chairman of the National Libertarian Party. If anybody wants to get involved on the air, got a question for Mike Dixon, the phone number is 1-800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. You know, some other excitement in libertarian news this year is a judge from California running for the United States Senate. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Judge Gray is a fascinating man. He's a judge in Los Angeles in that marketplace. And he has resigned his seat or taken a leave of absence, I guess, from his seat on the bench to run for U.S. Senate. And his signature leading issue is to end the war on drugs. And I'll tell you, once again, you know about this stuff in theory. You understand why the war on drugs is just an awful, awful idea. And I talk about it, as I did earlier today, about dosage and purity. But I'll tell you, this guy stands up and talks about what he's seen in his courtroom, where he has to impose mandatory minimums on people that really didn't do much but, you know, carry a package across the street for somebody who asked them to, or a girlfriend that answered a phone call for a boyfriend or whatever, and he's putting these people in jail for long periods of time, and they didn't have any real, they didn't cause any harm to anyone at all. And this is just a big, big issue. And I'll tell you, this guy is as, you know, visually conservative as you're going to get. He's clean cut, short hair, 50-something-year-old gentleman from Orange County, very, very Republican-looking guy, and he stands up and speaks about the drug war, and it just grabs you by the heart. And that's what we need to talk about. We need to take these things to people where they live.
Yeah, and you know, it's just as a matter of philosophy, this is something a friend and I were talking about the other day, about how on a question like, say, legalizing pot, that you have kind of this bell curve, where on one side you have people who say, oh, legalize it, man, it's pot, you own yourself, smoke whatever you like, do what you like. Then on the other end of the bell curve you have people who say, oh, no, it's the weed that grows in Satan's garden and it should be a felony and no one should ever be allowed to smoke it. And then you have all the people in the middle who don't really care, one way or another. And if you ask any of those people in the middle of the bell curve, well, why don't you care? Why don't you want to legalize pot or whatever? Their typical answer would be something to the effect of, eh, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Some hippie can't smoke his weed? When in fact, that's not the worst that can happen. The worst that can happen is the cops can kick in the door and slam his pregnant wife into the wall, causing her to lose her baby. They can shoot him. They can take the property, seize the bank accounts. And, you know, if he lives through all that, they can lock him in a cage for 20 years, a human being in a cage. That's the worst that can happen.
It really is, and until you start thinking about the natural extension of all this stuff, it's real easy to write it off. But I'll tell you, we got to talk about these things in terms that aren't about what we individually might want to do with ourselves or our bodies. We got to talk about it in terms of the moral implications of what these policies and these laws do to good people every day.
Yeah. And by the way, that anecdote about the pregnant wife being slammed into the wall, that really happened in a case in California, and where they shot the guy, and turned out he didn't have any pot anyway, but that's why they raided the house, supposedly.
They just probably made a mistake on the address or something.
Or either that, or they just wanted to seize his property because they could resell it and buy a lot of M16s and cop cars with it.
They needed a new boat or something. You never know.
And, you know, the drug war thing leads right into the federalism thing, where the national government, despite George Bush's campaign promises, the Department of Justice under John Ashcroft has been pretty relentless in prosecuting doctors and trying to interfere with the states who have legalized medical pot.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, that's another one where, you know, the right wing loves to talk about states' rights, but they don't like it very much then when they're the president and they want to do something that's good rhetoric on the weekend TV shows. You know, the Republicans love to talk about individual, you know, local control and local influence and all that, but I don't see them doing it in the war on drugs right now, especially where states have had referendums and the citizens overwhelmingly vote in favor of medical pot, and then the federal government comes in and threatens to prosecute the state officials, threatens to shut down federal aid to other programs that are unrelated to this. It's really a nasty, nasty situation.
Let's talk to Jerry in Michigan. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm not a libertarian. I'm not a Republican or anything else, but I'm a thinker. And I think the libertarians, I vote libertarian as often as I can. I think the libertarians are at this very moment missing the opportunity of a lifetime. I'm the guy that talks to everybody in the line at the bank, at the line at the supermarket. And everybody, Republican and Democrat, are fed up with their government. You know, I love my country, but I fear my government.
Sure.
It's unanimous, almost to the man. Well, I live near Detroit, so there are exceptions there. That's a union city. But to a man, they're fed up with their government, and the Republicans say, I don't know where to turn. So my suggestion is, on every street corner, there should be a sign that says, time for a real change. Vote Libertarian.
Mike, what do you say to that?
Well, I'll tell you, what we're looking for in the Libertarian Party is people that want to stand up and make a difference in their local communities. And the Badnarik campaign is an effort to energize people, to get people excited about it. But it all starts when somebody decides to make their community a Libertarian-friendly community and wants to get out there and put up that sign or put up that ad in the local paper or start showing up at city council meetings and asking those hard questions about budgets and all of that kind of stuff. It's every one of us that needs to do that kind of work in our own communities.
Well, and I know, I'm not sure about signs, but I know the Badnarik campaign is giving away Badnarik bumper stickers. If you go to badnarik.org, it's BADNARIK.org. That's the campaign website, and I know you can get at least get free bumper stickers there, and probably you can order some signs, too. And, in fact, I think that's one of the new slogans that the Libertarians Party is working on is Vote Libertarian for a Change. Kind of has that double meaning.
That's right.
Yeah, because, you know, this is the time because people are so fed up with the conservative, George Bush. He's no more conservative than the man in the moon is, you know. And the Republicans are getting fed up with his nonsense. He stands there and tells all of these good things, and he's got that stupid smirk on his face. And the smirk is, I know something you don't know.
Yeah, that smirk. I was just talking about that last night with a friend of mine. That smirk, how it's you can just see through the body language, it's you can hear every word in his brain as he's thinking to himself, ha-ha, they're buying it. All I have
they're
to do is say it,
yeah.
And they believe whatever I say, ha-ha.
Yeah.
And, all right. Thanks a lot for the call, Jerry. I sure
appreciate
it. Yeah,
let's get some advertisements out there. People don't even know about Libertarian. You know,
well, it's up to you,
man. Me standing in a bank line isn't going to do a hell of a lot of good.
You're right. Jerry, do you have an email account? All you got to do is just forward that link around.
Okay.
It's all up to you, man. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Shauna here in Austin, Texas.
Hi, Scott. I've been listening to the show and really enjoying it. First of all, I wanted to talk about the whole issue of not voting at all. And since there's no law anywhere that says that a certain number of people have to vote, by not voting, you just play into their hands because the 100,000 people that sign their petitions in every state or whatever are going to go out to the polls and vote, so it's just going to leave it to them to do whatever they want.
That's a very good point.
And
no
so I want to urge all Americans to vote for the third party of your choice, and if there's not a party out there that's reflecting your point of view, then you need to get together with like-minded people and start forming some local parties and putting up local candidates and getting it going, because that's the only way we're going to take it back is by putting some candidates out there that reflect some views that we can go along with.
I agree. And your second point was?
Huh?
Oh, you said you had two things, right?
Actually, that was the second thing, all Americans should go ahead and not only will it play into their hands to not vote, but we can get it out of their hands and into our hands by actually voting for third parties and going on out and forming third parties if that's what we need to do.
Right. I agree with you. And, you know, I think a lot of people in the dissent, although I'm not a party member myself, I do always vote Libertarian, but I know a lot of even, you know, people who call themselves Libertarians, they don't vote, and they hope for a day where nobody votes, where November 2nd comes and the total votes cast was 10, and that somehow that's going to take the mandate away from the state.
But see, it's not, because those 10 people then will have been given the power to do everything. When you stop voting, you give away your power to the people who are going to vote.
Very good point. Mike Dixon, what do you say?
Well, I'll tell you, I certainly was not advocating the don't vote position. I was merely sharing that I heard that espoused on a national.
Oh no, I was the one advocating it.
Okay, all right, not a problem. But I'll tell you one thing. I'll share an anecdote about my own life. I've got a friend who's a very strong Republican, and he's got young children about the same age as mine. And he taught his children during the Clinton years to see President Clinton on the television and to say, "That man's a liar." He thought this was cool, and he was a hardcore Republican. I have not sat down and talked to him about how he feels about that today, but I will tell you that my son wouldn't know who the president was if the president came into the House, because that's just not something that in my world is something any of us needs to be all that worked up about. I look forward to a day when we have a president, but when he has so little control over our daily life that it doesn't much matter to us. Of course, it still does matter so that we can make sure that they don't do bad things. But let's try to keep focused on the fact that we want to get our lives back and not politicize every little bit of our lives.
That's a good point. You know, Article 2 of the Constitution is pretty short. All right, it's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The guest this hour is Mike Dixon. He's the chairman of the National Libertarian Party. I have this theory, Mike, that what the Libertarian Party really has to do is it has to get enough votes that it's more than the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And that's what will really get the attention. Am I right?
You know, we do. When we do that in states at you know, a state senate or a gubernatorial level, we get tons of attention. We normally get that because in a year when we get that many votes, an incumbent loses. And invariably, we get blamed for that incumbent losing. And that's a really cool thing to have happen, because then everybody's talking about you for a period of time. And if that incumbent was really loved by their party faithful, you get blamed for a really long time. And that's a great thing. We've done that a handful of times across the country, and people do sit up and take notice when you start being bigger than the difference between the other two guys.
I have this other theory, and I'm not sure if I should be talking about this on the radio, but what the hell. I have two theories. One of them is that in order to do the very best thing for the Libertarian Party, to build the Libertarian Party to the biggest numbers it can possibly be, that Michael Badnarik needs to focus on the war. However, I also think that what he ought to be doing is trying his best to defeat George Bush, who is the worst president since Woodrow Wilson. And so then the question is, if he emphasizes the war too much, then maybe he won't do as good of a job of splitting the vote against the Republican Party. What do you think?
Well, I see those two issues as being important. I'm more intrigued by the first, the going against the war angle. I'm less intrigued by the other because I don't want to be perceived as a libertarian as being against one of the other two guys. I understood your arguments early in the show, and I think they were all valid. I probably even agree with them personally, but as a matter of our policy, I'd rather pick out an issue that we could really hammer home. And I'll tell you, the war is a big deal, and the fact that I don't see any way they're going to get around some kind of national service when this thing is all over. I know, as a politico, you want to call it the draft if you're against it. I doubt they're going to call it the draft, but they're going to call it something, and it's going to put our kids into uniforms and into service one way or another.
Which is basically just public slavery is all it is.
That is exactly what we're talking about. And I don't care what fuzzy word they use, but I got to tell you, kids who have to wear uniforms and go far away to do something that they didn't, you know, have as one of their goals in life is not something that this country is based on.
Yeah, well, and I'm afraid that no matter who wins, that's going to happen.
Right. That is absolutely the truth. The only person that's not going to let that happen is Michael Badnarik.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. So, let's see here. I'm looking down my list of questions here, trying to make sure that I haven't forgotten anything. Oh, here's one thing I wanted to ask you. I heard a rumor that the Libertarian Party National Convention of 2006 might take place here in Austin.
Austin is one of the cities under consideration. A decision will be made later this year.
All right, and we're almost out of time, so go ahead and give us your best plug that you possibly can for Michael Badnarik and the rest of the Libertarians that are going to be on the ballot in at least 49 states or 48 states come this November.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the whole issue hinges on people being more informed about what we stand for, and the best way to do that is to go to lp.org and learn about the party. And right there at the top of lp.org is the button that'll take you to badnarik.org. I won't even try to spell badnarik. Just go to lp.org and then click on the big picture of Mike, and then you'll be able to learn about both of us.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show today,
Good.
Mr. Dixon. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Talk to you later. All right, everybody. It's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back with Eric Garris, the director of antiwar.com.